werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. You can stick around.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Who are you?
I'm Justin Sowler.
Yeah, and what are you?
I'm a film critic.
For?
An Aquarius.
Besides that.
Okay. I'm for the Mountain Express.
Oh, the Mountain Express, yes. Oh, that's right. I work for them, too. My name's Ken Hankey.
That's interesting.
I'm also a film critic.
Fascinating.
I know. And when you put the two of us together, what do you have?
Well.
Besides that.
Okay. Elitist Bastards.
That's right. And as usual,
we've been to the movies.
Yes. And we are here in the
Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville on Hendersonville Road.
The lovely, picturesque garden spot of Asheville.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to talk about those movies we've been to.
Yes. What did you watch?
Oh, I watched several things.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's... you want to talk about one of them
You want to goose that? I mean, ask me about something. Dare you.
Tamara Drew. Which
Tamara Drew, which actually opens on Friday. Oh,
I like
the movie a whole lot. It's a Stephen Frears film, and if you don't know who Stephen Frears is,
what are you doing listening to this?
That's true too. But
maybe
you're
being educated.
Well, you're being educated by listening to this because Stephen Frears has been around for a very long time now. But he first made his mark in 1985 with My Beautiful Laundrette, which is kind of what brought him to the attention of the world. But being that he rejects the idea that he's an auteur, which is kind of nonsense. I could make a better case for him than many people who think they are. And he doesn't really promote himself, so you may not realize that he's the man who made My Beautiful Laundrette and Sammy and Rosie Get Laid and Dangerous Liaisons and The Grifters and Mrs. Henderson Presents and
High Fidelity
and... most famously recently, The Queen. And this is his...
Dirty Pretty Things.
His what?
Dirty Pretty Things.
Oh, yes, Dirty Pretty Things, which is an amazing film.
Maybe we should run that sometime.
We probably should, yeah. Except my copy's gone AWOL.
Well,
but we'll find
maybe
it
you'll get
eventually.
One for Christmas.
You never know. In any case, this is his film version of a very cheeky graphic novel, which is a graphic novel modern reimagining of Thomas Hardy's Far From the Madding Crowd. And I see that has caused a puzzled look to appear on the face of Mr. Schanefeld, who, by the way, is speaking to me and looking at me, although he claimed he wasn't going to. So, you know, his inconsistency is notable. Anyway, it's a very funny film that manages to skewer the academic world of literature, the British bourgeois world of literature, pop stars, plastic surgery, the fictional contrivance of the lusty young farmhand. You name it, it pretty much comes under fire in this film. But it doesn't do it in a really mean way. There's everything in this movie that you can think of, up to and including a cattle stampede. I really give this very high marks. Now tell me about something you've seen. Besides that.
I watched Unstoppable, the new Tony Scott.
And was it?
Well, it eventually stopped.
Oh, well, in which case then it's not Unstoppable.
And the train in question.
Oh. Okay.
To answer that question. Do you have any more questions?
Yeah, is it any good?
No. But it's not, it's mediocre. And that's totally on a Tony Scott scale. Like, he's made worse. which is not saying much.
Well, yeah, but he's made Domino and Man on Fire. Yes, you don't really have to go much.
It's just a big dumb. It's just an excuse for this train to run around. Basically, the plot is there's a train.
Yeah.
On the loose, as much as right, a train can be.
On the loose, yeah. So.
It's carrying tons of explosive toxic chemicals going 70 miles an hour through Pennsylvania, wreaking havoc, running over horse trailers and
threatening school buses full of children.
No, trains full of school
children. Oh, trains full of children. Better yes. still, I suppose.
Hopefully you didn't change that in the review. It's going to get me hate mail.
I don't believe I changed anything.
Okay.
Merely having memory loss. You know.
It's not surprising. So this train's running around, and then Denzel and Chris Pine are on a different train.
Yes.
And they decide they're going to go play hero and stop this train before it blows up Denzel's Hooter waitress daughters and some other stuff in this
town. Denzel's Hooters waitress daughters?
Yes. I think that's what they're trying. Why they're trying to stop it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's going to blow up this town if they don't.
The whole thing
it's going to hit this curve and go off into all these giant fuel tanks and also have... It sounds pretty disastrous for Pennsylvania. They say it's going to be one of the greatest disasters in the history of Pennsylvania, which is...
But they've had a senator that was really close for that, but, you know.
But, it's an excuse for stuff to blow up, and, like, there's this... Which is becoming a Tony Scott trademark, I think, is the random police car crash. There's one in Pelham 123 where it just...
Well, see, this is what I want to know is this.
Yes.
Okay, in Pelham 123, he dealt with the subway. In this, he's dealing with a regular old train.
Uh-huh.
Is there going to be a third? Is this going to be a trilogy? Is he going to deal with the L next?
Well, this one, it's on an elevated.
Oh, well, so in which case, he's going to have to come up with something new.
Yes. Maybe it's just...
A boat train.
Maybe. Maybe it'll be the monorail at Disney World.
There you go, the monorail at Disney World. If he does, I think you can sue... Right. Since you brought it up.
Okay, good. Things blow up and crash, and that's the movie, really.
And Denzel is Denzel-like, and Chris Pine is manly and obnoxious.
Yeah. Not obnoxious. His character's really is dumber than he is.
Wow.
So, but, okay. Yeah. There's no character, really, for either one of these, for any of the...
Well, Denzel doesn't need a character. He's Denzel. Chris Pine, on the other hand, doesn't have
a character. Well, they don't even bother, really. Just these guys on a train and don't stop it. And exciting things happen. So. But it's entertaining.
And shit
blows I was
up.
Never bored.
Okay.
And so, I mean, it accomplishes what it sets out to do, I think.
And shit blows up real neat. Okay.
So. Now, what's next?
Well, I don't know. What else did I see?
A movie you almost thought was really good. Correct.
Morning Glory is a film that could have been great.
Okay.
All the elements are there for it to have been a great comedy. And then they bitch it up by insisting on grafting on a stupid, boring romance that nobody cares about.
Right.
And it just slows the film down to no good end.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw The Devil Wears Prada, you saw that the woman who wrote the screenplay for both films cannot write a romance. Devil Wears Prada ground to a halt whenever it dealt with Anne Hathaway and her boyfriend.
Right.
This grinds to a similar halt whenever it deals with Rachel McAdams and her boyfriend. And that's made even worse by her boyfriend being played by Patrick Wilson, who is like... He makes Luke Wilson look really animated. And that's an accomplishment.
Okay.
Luke Wilson exists to make Ben Chaplin look good. And it's sort of a progressive thing. But when it's on its game, it's really good. Most of the stuff with McAdams and Harrison Ford... And Diane Keaton are really good. Diane Keaton is in her major Woody Allen delivery style mode, so she's in really good form. She doesn't have enough to do, unfortunately.
Right.
And then on top of all this, they pretty much take care of the plot resolution and then realize, oh, we haven't had the big ending. Right. So then they stage a big ending, which is so preposterous that it just, you know, your credulity, which was, you know, already a little stretched because these things tend to require that, is just gone, and all the goodwill that it's earned is really hard to remember when you're seeing someone being interviewed at 8 o'clock in the morning by NBC executives for a job on the Today Show. This just isn't happening. Moreover, to do it in a situation where there's a bank of televisions behind them so that she can watch what's happening on her morning show. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And it really hurts the film. At the same time, I didn't mind the film. The parts of the film that work are good enough that I won't not recommend it, but I'm not going to get excited about recommending it. And I could have been.
I see.
So, you saw something else, too.
Yes. Which was Skyline. Which is awful. I think the fact that there's... I knew going in it was going to be awful.
I was hoping it was going to be unintentionally funny because the trailer was.
Really, it's so humorless that it's hard to be...
How can a movie about aliens vacuuming up people from Los Angeles not be funny?
Well, because the actual vacuuming is in one scene, I think. Oh. And then the rest of it turns into just a hodgepodge of... Not even, like, old sci-fi, like, stuff within the last 10, 11 years. So these guys have no frame of reference.
Well, that makes it relevant, you see.
One, it's stuff that's exactly ripped off.
To use an overused word, that makes it relevant.
No, it doesn't. It makes it derivative. And so...
It would still be derivative if they were ripping off Metropolis, but it would at least be indicative of the fact that they've actually seen a movie.
Yeah. Rip off good movies.
Yes.
Don't rip off World of the Worlds.
No. No.
Don't rip off Cloverfield. Like, let's not do these things.
No. You could set fire to Cloverfield. That would suit me just fine.
Yes. So, it's just a bunch of... Because these guys, the brothers Strauss who made it, they cut their teeth.
And that, by the way, folks, is how they build themselves. Yes. They are the brothers Strauss.
They cut their teeth doing special effects. And so this movie is one big... I guess it's them trying to show off...
Their special effects prowess?
Yeah, it's all right, I guess. The plot is...
I don't know. The shot of the people being sucked up into the spaceship is pretty funny. Little teeny tiny people.
But the plot's stupid. It goes on too long. I think it's an hour and a half, and it felt like it went on too long.
Well, you see, and I really kind of regretted having to give you that.
Well, it's a pity.
Yeah, well, them's the breaks.
Yes. Awful science fiction movie. That's all you need to know about that. So.
And I, on the other hand, saw Conviction.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what Conviction is, it's the story of Betty Ann Warren. Waters, excuse me. Betty Ann Waters, who... spent 18 years of her life getting a GED, a college degree, and a law degree in order to get her wrongfully convicted of murder brother out of prison.
Is that cheaper than hiring a lawyer?
Well, the thing that's so weird about it is that nothing that she does to get him out of prison, and I'm not giving away anything because, I mean, let's face it, they aren't going to make a movie where she spends 18 years and it has a bad ending. This isn't happening. Plainly speaking, that's not a crowd pleaser. You know, nothing that she does has anything to do with her legal degree.
Okay.
He's really gotten out more by her lawyer friend and by a... famous lawyer played by Peter Gallagher, whose eyebrows, by the way, have apparently been given a crew cut.
Seemed off-putting.
Yes, well.
I can't even imagine that.
Well, they're less... You don't... You know, in fact, the person I saw it with had to ask me, who is that? And I'm sure it was the eyebrows that made it confusing. In any case, they're the ones who... The only thing that she really does that has any bearing is she plays on the sympathy of an old woman at the courthouse that it's her brother, and she's been spending all these years trying to get him out of prison, and could she please go look for these files that were supposedly destroyed 17 years ago or something. And of course, lo and behold, the old lady, moved by her plight, goes and finds them, and then there's more drama. And the whole thing is just... It's just...
You don't sound like you like this movie.
I didn't. It was absolutely... I mean, it's well made. I can't say it's not well made. I can't say it's not well acted, although... You know, it's Hilary Swank and her gigantic teeth doing an accent. But there's obvious Oscar bait there. But it just didn't work for me. I mean, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be when I went in. It delivered exactly what I thought it would deliver, and I was left completely unmoved by it. Other people are probably just entranced by the portrayal of Hilary Swank as this woman transfigured by love and devotion for her brother. And I would have been a lot more comfortable if they had just left it without a "Where Are They Now?" series of titles at the end, because rather interestingly, the one thing that they do not bring you up to date on is what happened to him and the fact that he fell off a wall on his way home from having dinner with his mother 6 months after he got out of prison. I don't know what he was doing on this wall, but in any case, 6 months later, the man is dead. And they don't tell you that, which to me is just as disingenuous as you can get.
How would you word that? He fell off a wall 6 months later?
Well, you know, he was killed in an accident 6 months later. Is anything... Anyway, I know I was not taken with it. On the other hand,
yes, but not opening this.
But opening this Friday is Fair Game, which is Doug Liman's new picture, for which he is obviously trying to atone for his last couple of pictures.
Jumper is one of them.
Yeah, Jumper is something that, you know, that requires praying for the soul of John Lennon on your hands and knees while cleaning out the monastery from top to bottom, I believe. But this is a really good political thriller with Naomi Watts and Sean Penn, which is going to polarize a lot of viewers, I'm sure, simply by virtue of the fact, and I didn't even realize this until recently, that there are still people in this world who believe that there were weapons of mass destruction and that we went to war with Iraq on sound intelligence. These people still exist.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to imagine, but they do. And as a result, a film that is about that CIA agent, Valerie Plame, who was outed by Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and considered, as Rove supposedly put it, fair game in order to discredit her and her husband, because her husband blew the whistle on the fact that her husband is Sean Penn in the film, blew the whistle on the fact that he had been sent to Niger to check out whether or not it was possible that Iraq had bought all this uranium from them, and he found out that not only was it, did it not happen, that there is no way it could have happened. And, of course, this, by the time the Bush administration got finished with it, it was confirmed that they had. There are several things like that in the course of the film, and I'm sure there are people who will swear that those things were true, regardless of what the film says, especially since it has, you know, Sean Penn in the film, which, of course, means it can't be trusted because he's, you know, too liberal to his own good. He may even be too liberal for a liberal's own good sometimes. So I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, it's one of those films that's designed to assume that you, it assumes that you do believe that the war in Iraq was totally bogus. And what it basically sets out to do is to piss you off all over again. And it's very good at that. And it's excellently done in that respect. Penn is very good. Naomi Watts is perhaps even better. It's an excellent film. And along with Tamara Drew, I recommend it as something to go see this week if you aren't going to go see the film. And even if you are going to go see the film, I still think you should manage to take these in.
So, Thursday?
Thursday.
What are we running?
Thursday Horror Picture Show. And we are running Stuart Walker's Werewolf of London with Henry Hall and Warner Oland, and his next to last appearance as something other than Charlie Chan. And it's the first werewolf movie. It gets really short shrift a lot of times because it's not The Wolfman, to which I say thank God. I think it's a much better film than The Wolfman. The Wolfman, however, has this really sympathetic portrayal by Lon Chaney of Larry Talbot, and it is the perfect film for 12-year-old boys. I mean, because you identify at that age, you identify with Larry Talbot and the way that all of a sudden his body is growing hair and he's awkward and, you know, all the rest of this stuff, and there's something going on inside him that he doesn't understand. It's a perfectly good film for kids. Werewolf of London, on the other hand, is a film for adults. It's a film about a scientist, a botanist, who understands what's happening to him, but doesn't believe it's possible. So he's hemmed in by his scientific rationality, and he's hemmed in by upper-class English society. And the fact that he's imprisoned by this, and the film brings home all the time, because he's always being shot through actual bars or staircases turned into bars. He's always being shown as being in some kind of prison. It's very, very atmospheric. It's the werewolf makeup, I think, is the best ever, because it actually does look like a combination, or it does look, as Warner Oland says, you know, a satanic being with the worst qualities of both man and wolf. At one point,
but he still dresses nice.
Yes, he does. But he's not the lumbering teddy bear beast, so I don't really have any problem with the idea that before he goes out on one of his nocturnal forays, that he would put on a cap and a scarf, because, you know, it allows you to kind of hulk better in the shadows. And one of the peculiarities of the werewolf lore in this, which, you know, things always make up their own lore. This has nothing to do with silver bullets, by the way, and it's actually pretty free of mumbo-jumbo altogether. But it does put forth the idea that if the werewolf does not kill at least one victim each night that he turns into a wolf or a werewolf, he will become permanently afflicted and not turn back into a human being. That, I think, is unique to the film. The fact that he can just be killed by being shot is not unique to the film. But, you know, the film can do whatever it wants. It was the first one. It's got a splendid score, which has about 15 minutes of new music, and the rest of it is all library track, which is taken from the same music that viewers who've seen The Black Cat and The Raven will be more than familiar with, because it's all over them too, because it was very useful music. So I really recommend it. If you're a fan of classic horror and you haven't seen this, you really need to see it, because it really is. It's the bee's knees of werewolf movies.
And then, well, we have Actual Film Society Tuesday in our first foray into animation.
Yes. It's really in honor of Satoshi Kon, the Japanese animator who died in August at the age of 46 of pancreatic cancer. And we wanted to run something of his. And my initial response was that we should run Paprika, because Paprika is since we're rated for explicit content, I'm going to go ahead and say it, is like 90 minutes of nonstop mindfuckery. But we decided to go with his first big hit, which really, you don't know how big of a hit it really was, but it was the film that really... Perfect Blue was his first feature, but Millennium Actress really is the one that drew attention to him. And it won't get you as fucked up as Paprika will, but if anything, it probably is, has a greater emotional resonance. It is very involving, and it's just as clever in its own way and just as visually striking as Paprika. And when you see it and realize, you know, we really lost something when this man died at such an early age. But he did leave behind Millennium Actress and Tokyo Godfathers and Paprika, and his final film is being completed by people he worked with, which is, I don't know if you'd call it a sequel or a spinoff of Paprika, but it is connected to it. So we will one day have that, but then there won't be any more. So come see this one.
Well, Brady talked about Fair Game and Tamer Drew coming out this week.
Right. So there are only two other things coming out.
But the only thing anybody cares about on Earth right now
is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. So and I'm no better. I want to see it. I've liked all of the films to one degree or another. I really liked number 3, The Prisoner of Azkaban, and the last one, Half-Blood Prince. I thought those were extremely good movies. I mean, you know, to the point of being excellent movies. The others are at least good. I didn't see any of these films where there was a lessening of attempt. They're really, it's a quality product. I mean, it just is.
Though, for me, I guess it was 4 and 5. I remember getting to the end of 5 and being like, I really don't care about this. And then I went and saw 6 anyway and really liked it, which is what I think was the most...
Well,
4,
is,
5, and 6 all were...
Yeah.
I was just like, eh. Or no, 4 and 5, sorry. I just didn't care. And then,
but
well, 6,
I think 4 and 5 were working at a huge disadvantage in coming right after Azkaban, too.
Right.
Because Azkaban was so much more stylish than anything we'd had before. And all of a sudden, we're back to direction that is...
I think the sixth
about
one...
like Chris Columbus level.
Yeah. Well, the sixth one sort of transcends Harry Potter.
It does, and it has a different look, it has a different sound.
It touches on much
darker film.
Yeah.
It's
more relatable.
Yeah, I think it probably is more relatable. But then again, it also, you know, the characters are getting older, it's a little easier to relate to them than it was when... You know, because neither of us saw these things when we were
it's probably the
10,
best looking.
Years old. Yes, it probably is the best looking. The production design on that one was gorgeous, and I'm hoping, since we have the same director at work here, that you know it should be just the same. Unlike most of the people who like these films, I stopped reading halfway through the second book, and that was as far as I went as far as reading these things is concerned. So I have no actual clue as to what the overall content of any of these are before I go to see them. So I'm certainly going to go. Now, I am not so hardcore, I think, that I'm going to be there at midnight on Thursday, but I will be there on Friday morning. Whether at 10 or 11:30 remains to be seen at this point, but I will be there at one of them.
And in case you don't want to watch Harry Potter, there's...
Or Tamara Drew, or Fair Game.
The new Paul...
There's Paul Haggis with the next 3 days.
A Which haggisized... Hopefully it doesn't feel like that.
No, probably will. It seems that it's very haggisized. It's a 2008 French thriller that he has remade, and I guess he has probably filled it with all sorts of socially relevant things, you know. This is a man that goes around making socially relevant movies who, you know, in 2005 made a movie that I guess he thought was groundbreaking because it made the point that racism is bad. This was something I had never known before he brought that up in 2005. Yeah, I see that Mr. Schanefeld is shocked to learn this.
Ken
even
was a
now.
Racist before he saw that movie. That's what I think what we can draw from that.
Yeah. In any case, it's Russell Crowe, who apparently does not care to invest 18 years getting an education in order to get his wrongfully convicted wife out of prison. So, with the aid of some expert played by Liam Neeson, you know, where exactly do you find an expert
Craigslist.
On how to break out of prison? I mean, did you take out a classified ad? I mean,
Craigslist.
You know,
you say looking for someone to bust my wife out.
Oh, okay. So
I'm going to post that tonight and see if anybody responds.
So he's going to break her out of prison with the guidance of Liam Neeson, and that's the story. You're on your own.
It's fine.
And by that I mean the viewers and Mr. Souther, who is going to enjoy this movie.
Oh, I'm going to love it.
No end.
I'll love the hell out of it.
No end. He will. He will love the hell out of it.
And on that note,
yeah, I think that's probably as far as we need to go tonight.
We're signing off.
We are signing off. So that means that I'm Ken Hankey.
I'm Justin Souther.
Yep.
Film critics for the Mountain Express, the kindly people that allow us to jibber jabber on there.
Yes, we rattle on.
Use up their bandwidth.
And eat up their bandwidth and annoy all the right people.
Have Photoshop monkeys
yes.
on their front page.
That's right.
That's very sweet.
And we better have some monkeys.
They kind of do just let us do whatever.
Yeah, I don't think they listen.
Yeah, they probably don't.
They probably don't. It's probably wise on their part that they don't listen, so. God knows I don't listen to these
Maybe you'll
things.
Get an email from Jeff now.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, it's indeed possible.
Give him a code word to put. So,
yeah.
But Jeff, case, if you're listening.
They're the ones who
email Ken with the word kumquat.
That's right.
We'll know.
And we'll know whether you're a W.C. Fields fan by how you spell that word. Just remember that. We have neglected to mention that the program is produced by that bastion of good taste and bastardliness himself, Mr. Steve Schanefeld.
The end.
Yes. We'll be right back.